It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. We had about 15 minutes of spring this year, kind of typical in Minnesota, and then it turned into summer all of a sudden, and all of the gardens went in over Memorial Day, all of the gardeners kneeling out in the dirt and reading the directions on the back of the seed packets and making the little trench with their forefinger and dropping the seeds in and tamping them down. A little late, but there it was, and then right after they put in the seeds, we got this beautiful drenching rain, and then after the rain, the sun came out and it got up into the 80s. So beautiful. It's the time of year when Minnesota is most like California, which it would be even more so if we were Californians, which we are not, because if we were, we wouldn't live back there, but it's the most like what we imagine California to be, this paradise when the windows are all open and we sit outside in the backyard and we eat supper and the door is open to the screen porch and the wind blows through the house, this lovely, sensuous time of year. Like California, California, the land of the spa to us, the land where there is no indoors or outdoors, it's all sort of one, and other boundaries fall as well. A place where people can get so relaxed by the sunlight and the beautiful nature and certain fruit drinks that they have in the afternoon that people start telling their whole personal history to the UPS man when he comes. And it's not like where we are. The rhubarb is up, and the first rhubarb pies from fresh rhubarb, and the rhubarb sauce being made, and now we have to think about running into Senator Kay Torvaldsen on the street and having to listen to him tell us his rhubarb story, one of several boring stories that he has, this old man, the oldest man in our town, still standing on two legs in his mid-90s. Walking around with his great white cloud of hair and his sunken chest and this summer suit on which food of many colors has been spilled over the years. He walks around and he's venerated in our town, but we prefer to venerate him at a distance because his breath is breath that does not encourage intimate conversation. It's some days when Bertha can get him to brush and gargle, he's okay, but other days, you get up close to Senator Kay, and his breath smells like he's been eating fish that washed up on shore. It's not a pleasant thing. And then he wants to tell you his rhubarb story, which took place back in the Coolidge administration when he was a teenager, and he was skinny dipping in the lake, and he was walking up through the woods, and a bear chased him, and he ran through a rhubarb patch, and the bear stopped and ate the rhubarb, and his life was spared. And if that were all there was to the story, it wouldn't be bad. But he's a storyteller who keeps adding on to the front. The preface gets longer and longer. And now when he tells you this rhubarb story, he doesn't start with skinny dipping. He starts with what he was doing that morning. He was plastering walls at the apartment up above his Uncle Harry's dry goods store on Main Street. And he's got to talk to you about plastering and how the plaster is mixed and how it should be applied and how it is smoothed out, and talk about Uncle Harry coming over from Norway and talk a little bit about his dog Bjorn. And you stand there and you start to hallucinate listening to this man. You just get so that you avoid him at any price. People cross the street to avoid this old man tottering towards us with a tale to tell which has no end. You could die listening to it. And some people have wished they were dead. It was the first wedding of the summer, Saturday, last Saturday, at the Emmett's house. It was in their backyard, just up the hill from Main Street. 85 guests came to sit in the backyard. Memorial Day is not a good weekend for weddings, but the Emmetts were so grateful that their daughter decided to be married at all, and that she would be married at home, and that she would wear a wedding dress. So they put on this wedding for Sally, their beloved daughter, just graduated from McAllister College, marrying a boy named Steve, who is hard to figure out. He is so extremely quiet. But there they all were, out in the backyard, 85 of us in folding chairs out there, and the bridal party gathering in front of the garage, and all of us waiting under the arbor. There was a justice of the peace who had been brought in from St. Rosa, a woman in a long purple dress, looked like she'd worn it to the last funeral she went to, looked like she might be the next one to be buried. A justice of the peace because Sally agreed to get married at home in Lake Wobegon on one condition: there be no Lutheranism whatsoever. No hymns, no prayers, no references to God, zero tolerance on the Lutheranism. So Bernice agreed to it. Fine, just come home, darling. We'll do whatever you want. They lined up there to get ready to go in. So the music was provided by a CD player that sat in the kitchen window and was turned up loud. So you couldn't get all of the words of the music, but you got a general idea. The mother of the bride came in, looking lovely and terrified, and the father of the bride. The bride and the groom, are going to walk up the aisle together in innovation, but if that's what she wants, that's just absolutely fine. The mother, distressed, wondering if the ham salad sandwiches were done. Did they remember to cut the crusts off? The wedding party gathered over in the back, and the parents of the groom came and sat down in the front row. People looked up at the sky. It was looking dark. It was chilly. It smelled like rain coming in. The ring bearer was there in a little tuxedo, a little boy, his mother standing on the sidelines, hissing at him. Violent contortions telling him what to do. Stand up straight. Stand up straight, or I'll slap you. I mean it. And the singer on the CD was singing a song about love, meaning walking together down a long road, and that the gift of love is freedom, which is not what we believe, but whatever she wants at her wedding is perfectly all right. And now they're just about to come in, and then they decide they will take off their shoes and socks. Well, fine. He is from California, after all. There are his parents sitting in the front row. They're both from Los Angeles. They say they were born in Minnesota, and they moved out to Lakewood in Los Angeles about 40 years ago, but you couldn't tell it to look at them. They're both slender and tan, and the father of the groom has his dark glasses up on top of his head. When you look at that, why would a person do that? Why wouldn't you just put them in your pocket? Why would a man stand with his glasses on top of his head? People don't do that in this town. The parents of the groom both have black t-shirts on. What's that about? A wedding? We wear black at a wedding? They look so. And the man is wearing pants with elastic around the ankles. Grown people don't wear those things here. We try not to look at him, but it's hard. It's hard not to. And then finally, they have to turn the CD back to the beginning so we hear the song one more time about love being granting freedom to each other. And then the bride and the groom come up hand in hand, they're barefoot, followed by the ring bearer, carrying the little satin pillow with the rings on it, his mother walking up the side. Don't stand up. I told you. They come and stand up before the justice of the peace, and the bride turns and she asks all of us to stand, and we do. And then she asks us to hold hands. And we do, even people who've come alone and who've found themselves sitting beside people they would never dream of holding hands with in their life, and not in the next life either. Nonetheless, we are Lutherans. We have a sense of duty. We must now hold hands. Not for Sally, not for Steve, but for Bernice, for the mother of the bride. So we do this. And now we see that we are going to be holding hands for the rest of this service. While the bride and the groom read their letters to each other, which we can see looking at them are not postcards. These are more like term papers. And he starts in reading his, and he tosses in some quotes from Thoreau and Emerson and Emily Dickinson. And after a couple of minutes, you just give up any idea of trying to figure out what he's saying. And you just look up at the sky, and it is getting dark. And you say a little prayer, God have mercy. God have mercy, because she doesn't want a Lutheran wedding, God. She says she's an atheist. She's a Lutheran atheist, however, because it's a Lutheran God she doesn't believe in. So, listen. Don't rain on this, because this house is too small for 85 people. We can't let these two just get in a car and drive away down the road. It would kill Bernice. The house is too small. The only place that could shelter all of these people is just down the street and across the alley, the Lutheran church over there. Hold off, God, for a minute. He reads on and on and on. And now it is the bride's turn to read her essay. And she has written an essay about the love of her family and how the love of her family supported her at a time of religious crisis in her life, when she came to realize that God is in each one of us. God is in nature. God does not mean for us to suffer or to suffer want. God means for us to be happy, which is not what we believe, but it's her wedding. It's her wedding. And how the love of her family saw her through this time in her life, this time in her life when she realized that the cosmos is all around us and eternity is within all of us. And if we will simply listen, we can hear the earth as it rotates on its axis. We can feel ourselves as part of this great, onward, slow-moving of time. The justice of the peace looked over at Bernice to say, what's going on? When do I marry these people? But Bernice was crying. She was starting to cry now. It was good that we all held hands. It kept Bernice, the mother of the bride, from tearing her hair out, because it was getting really dark and the wind was picking up and it was blowing the leaves on the arbor under which the bridal couple were standing. It wasn't affecting the hair of the justice of the peace, which looked as if it could stand up to a hurricane. But it looked as if rain was moving in from the northwest, and Bernice started to cry as her daughter talked about the love of her parents for her and how terribly grateful she was for it. The bride stood there lovely, weeping herself in her strapless wedding gown, which revealed the tattoo on her shoulder. Stood there barefoot, her long blonde hair streaming over her shoulders. And she was weeping, and Bernice was weeping. And the California parents of the groom suddenly smiled. They recognized emotion now in these people. There was feeling here. There was an act of recovery taking place. There was an act of transformation. They wanted to talk, to have a conversation, to exchange views with these people. But now we had moved on to the wedding vows. And now, by some miracle of miracles, the sky had become suddenly blue and the sun had come out and God was smiling down at us. And they said their vows and they promised to honor each other and to love each other forever. It seemed as if they promised to do this forever. And then the wedding was over, and the big buffet tables were carried out from the garage where Bernice's sisters had been working so hard on the salad and on the fruit and on the beautiful ham salad sandwiches with the pimentos and the iced tea and the lemonade. And people gathered around to wish the young people well and to give them all sorts of gifts, many of which made from stainless steel. We all stood, and the California mother and the California father wandered around to look at the flowers in the garden. They had brought some pictures of California with them, their house in Lakewood, a nice sort of rambler with a little brick in front and an overhang of the roof over a bay window, and there was a carport and a beautiful yard and a lot of ornate trees and plantings of flowers. Somebody said, "Boy, that must take up a lot of your time doing that." Well, they said they had a gardener. People just looked down at their shoes to hear that. It's embarrassing. Hiring somebody to garden for you in Lake Wobegon would be sort of like hiring somebody to cut up your food into small pieces. It's what adults do for themselves. But there they were. They had pictures of their house, and they had pictures of their car, and they had pictures of the Crystal Cathedral where they go to church on Sunday. Not really. They go to an in-car worship center, which is a parking lot just alongside. Interesting idea. Go to church, but not go in. We've certainly considered that possibility often in Lake Wobegon. People didn't know how to talk to them somehow. Not him with his glasses parked on top of his head and pants with the elastic around the ankles. What are those for? To keep something in or keep it out? So the Californian couple was wandering around the Emmett's backyard pretending to look at their plants and their flowers, but really just biding their time for when they could make a decent farewell and get in their cars and drive off to Minneapolis and have some decent food and have a martini. And as they were just about to go, they smelled this terrible smell, and they turned, and an old man was grabbing their elbow. He said, "I'm not sure you've got that in California, but that's rhubarb right down there. I look at rhubarb, I can't help but remember. Back when I was young, I believe this was in 1924, 24 or 25, in the summer, 25 I think it was, no, it wouldn't have been 20, it would have been 24. I was out swimming and I ran into this bear. Now, you know what I'd been doing that morning, however, I'd been plastering up my Uncle Harry's dry goods store, which is up there on Main Street. They tore that down around 55, I think it was 55 or 56. Can't be sure. They tore it down and built a fire barn. You probably passed by the fire barn when you came into a big concrete block building with a siren on the roof. It looks like a water tower. It's really a siren. They put that in later, 58 or 59, I believe. He went on and he went on. His story moved in the opposite direction from the bear and the rhubarb. It moved backward in time. The mention of the firehouse reminded him of a nephew who had been a fireman, and the nephew had moved to Nashville, Tennessee. And now Senator Kay Torvaldsen was recalling trips of his that had taken him through Nashville, Tennessee. Trips to Florida and the people who had been with him on those trips and a little bit about their history. And now the California couple could feel the earth turning under their feet. They could sense the cosmos. They could hear eternity all around them. It was a hallucinatory experience. They were so grateful when they got out. An hour later, it seemed like 2 weeks. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.